Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. So when the Supreme Court ruling happened yesterday, Chad, I immediately thought of Clay Travis. Like, this is a story made for him. He went to Washington to hear arguments in December for this.
Did you picture Clay Travis jumping into his vault of cash like DuckTales, doing a backstroke through all of his money?
I immediately thought Clay is about to open a sports book on Broadway.
Yeah. Clay is probably prospecting some real estate right now all over Nashville.
Clay Travis joins us from Outkick. Clay, can we get in on that with you?
I'd like to have my own casino in the state of Tennessee focused on sports gambling. I really would. I don't know what the state of Tennessee is going to do about legalizing sports gambling, but I think it's probably going to happen at some point. And, first of all, thanks for having me on. Second, this is something that I've been paying attention to for years. I mean, when I was on 3HL back in the day, I remember having discussions about this and the fact that I believed it would happen one day. This morning, I talked to Todd Furman. You guys may remember we did live shows for 2 years in 2014 and 2015 from a Vegas casino for FS1, which was, I believe, the first time this had ever happened anywhere for national television. And I thought it was an inevitability. I didn't know it would happen this quickly, and I think there are certainly a lot of details still to be unraveled and determined before all is said and done here.
So, Clay, before we get hot and heavy into the sports gambling stuff, DYO, defend your outfit at Steeplechase on Saturday with the shorts, the linen shirt, I think it was linen, and the flip-flops at Steeplechase.
I loved it, Clay.
Well, first of all, the easy way to describe my outfits in general is I don't care typically what anybody thinks about what I'm wearing. I go for comfort over style every time. And so it was 90 degrees. I'm going to go shorts. It was flip-flops. I mean, like, why would you wear closed-toed shoes when it's 90 degrees? It doesn't make any sense to me. That's absurd. And on the linen shirt, my wife picked it out. So the other thing I would say is, I don't even pick out my clothes typically when I go out in person now. I just tell my wife, what should I wear? So she's getting herself ready. I wake up the next morning. I'm like, what do you think I should wear? She said, I picked you out some white shorts and your pink shirt.
Dear God.
And I just put it on. I didn't ask a single question.
About, so what you wear is about your comfort, but it's making a lot of us uncomfortable. I don't have an objection to the outfit. I have an objection to the marital relationship where your wife lays your clothes out for you.
Oh, yeah. She totally lays my clothes out. We're going to the beach for 2 weeks. I won't pack. I won't make a single clothing decision.
This poor woman.
we go on vacation every single time. My wife packs everything. So we went on the cruise with the kids. She packed for all three of the boys as well as for me. I have zero to do with any of the decisions made about my clothing.
Why, Clay, is everybody, the universal opinion is that betting is going to explode now. I'm not a bettor. I know a lot of sports fans who aren't bettors. And the fact that it could be legal in my state sometime soon isn't going to make me a bettor. So I hope that all the people who are betting offshore or that have bookies come into the mainstream and we get some tax dollars out of it. But why are we convinced that all of a sudden when it's legal, everybody's going to now dip their toe in the water and do it?
I think there are lots of people who, I don't know about everybody, but I think there are lots of people who will do things that are legal that they wouldn't do if they were illegal. I'll give you an example. In Colorado, I think there are a lot of people who will eat edible marijuana-infused candies or whatnot that would not have sought out marijuana if it were not legal. If I were in Colorado, I would put myself in that category, right?
I think that is largely because it's regulated now, and it used to be buying it from a dude on the street corner where you didn't know where it came from, and now you do.
I think there, I think there are a lot of people out there who would be interested in gambling that gamble when they go to Vegas on sports, for instance, and will sit in a sports book and gamble all day, but don't feel comfortable putting their credit card information into an offshore betting company, and also don't want to go through the trouble of finding a bookie and having a guy that they have a relationship with to place bets, just because they don't feel comfortable doing it. You know, there's something that feels very comfortable about if you're at a Vegas casino, hey, there's the sports book. My wife is going to go shop somewhere on the strip today. I'm going to go bet on these three games that are going to be taking place today. And I'm going to go up to the window, and it makes it fun and exhilarating to do something that you might not do anywhere else. So I think there is a segment of the population that will do that. Now, to your larger question, I think that's why all these states have to get it right, because the guy who's already out there gambling, the guy who already has an offshore account, the guy who has already got a bookie, in order to make him switch and come into the light, so to speak, and behave in a quote-unquote legal fashion, I think you need to make it as easy as possible for him. And I'll give you an example. Offshores are insanely popular now. At halftime of every NFL or college football game that I'm interested in, I will go check and see what the halftime line is. There is a 0% chance that I will ever get into my car and drive to a physical location to place a halftime wager on a game that I'm watching. There's a 100% chance that if I'm regularly gambling, I would do it from my phone. So I think states like Tennessee have to be progressive in the way that they approach gambling and understand what guys in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are already doing if they're going to bring them into the legal arena of sports gambling.
Clay Travis is with us on the Midday 180.
You wrote a bit about how it could change TV. I know you're a big Scott Van Pelt fan. I think Bad Beats is one of the worst segments in the world because I didn't bet on the Toledo-Akron game, so I don't give a damn about a 22-point spread in that game that got thrown off. So if we're going to go to more programming like this, is the thinking it'll hook an important audience even though it turns off the people who don't bet? I don't want a bunch of betting stuff on.
It's a good question, and I think a little bit about this like I do fantasy sports. I have talked about this before. Like, whenever I'm driving around and listening to Sports Talk Radio or anything else, when there's a fantasy expert on, I change the channel and listen to music, right? Because I just don't care about fantasy football. Like, if somebody's calling in and saying, hey, should I start, this running back or another running back? I'm like, I just want to ram my head into the steering wheel over and over again. I'm like, this is awful.
Same with us.
Right? We feel the same way.
Yeah, but when it's somebody who is doing a gambling segment and they're saying, hey, should I pick this or should I pick that? Like, everybody is on one side or the other. So I think the easy answer is you got to cover a broad swath of the American population. I feel the same way, by the way, about fantasy football talk as I do about who's better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James. And I guarantee you there'll be 6 hours done on that on television today. So I think what's likely is that there will be a lot more gambling on television. I think it's even possible. If I were advising and somebody said, hey, Clay, what would you do if you were running Fox or CBS or NBC or ESPN? Would you rather have ESPN News or an ESPN channel devoted 100% to gambling?
I just think if that guy's so good, he's on a beach in Monaco.
No, but I think that it's an illusion that people are really trying to win a lot of money by gambling. I think for most people, it's the same reason you have a beer when you watch a football game. It's because you like football with beer better than you do football without beer. I think a lot of people out there, if they are sitting back and watching a game, and I'll put myself in this category, I'd rather have $100 on a game that I don't care about that much than not have $100 on a game. Does that make sense? It makes the sport better for me. It's like getting dessert with a meal.
Well, and I'm interested in this broadcast angle that you wrote about, Clay. And by the way, Clay Travis, OutkickTheCoverage.com is with us right now. But the idea of the specialized segment, the same way you feel about fantasy sports segments, I feel the same way about fantasy sports segments on TV or radio as I feel about gambling segments. I hate both. Neither one interests me at all. So I like the idea of the specialized network. You mentioned FS Gambling or ESPN Gambling, where the gamblers can go to that. I don't like the idea of gambling infiltrating my national broadcast of games, which I fear that will happen with broadcast now.
I think what they should do with broadcast, first of all, is they should start to offer different ways to listen to a game. So if you want Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler for the game of the week, I think they do a really good job in college football, right? Then you can get those two guys, and they're the voice of God, and they're going to do the standard broadcast. If you want a gambling version, gambling-centric version of the game, then you should be able to find that too. And frankly, ESPN has done versions of this, and we've done versions of this at Fox back in the day, of different kinds of ways to call a game that are non-traditional, what I would call it. But I think if you're going to do all these networks, I think there is certainly a market to cover sports gambling like it is the stock market. I think that you could have a ticker at the bottom of the screen that instead of just constantly telling you the same scores that have happened the night before, you can have like different colors based on the line is moving, new information, because really gambling is information based just like the stock market is. And I can see that becoming increasingly more and more popular for people who like it. And then I also think that you should put up on the score, when you're doing a score. I love the Scott Van Pelt Bad Beat segment. I think it's fantastic. But I think it goes to, in general, what we're moving towards is less of a sports universe where everybody gets the same kind of broadcast and more towards one that's similar to the world of television in general, which is you may like Breaking Bad, I may like Westworld. We watch the show we like as opposed to watching the same show.
Clay, is there a big advantage to being the first state to dive in headfirst with this, like New Jersey likely will be, versus a state waiting to make sure they get it right? Is patience a virtue, or do you need to be in that first couple of states to really take advantage of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think it matters so much in Nashville, but I think, for instance, it could matter a great deal in Memphis, and let me explain why. If you lived in Memphis or the surrounding areas right now, I don't know what Mississippi is going to decide 100%, but I think by football season, you'll be able to legally gamble in Mississippi at the Tunica casinos, at the Biloxi casinos, and maybe if they follow the example of Nevada, which I think there'll be a lot of people who will want it to happen, you can have your own app and be able to gamble legally all over the state of Mississippi. So I think this gets into an interesting question. Would lots of people in Memphis be interested enough in gambling legally that they might be willing to drive across the border into Mississippi to place wagers on Friday night or on Saturday morning and then drive back? Because it's governed by the geo-targeting, right? So wherever the cell phone tower is, you have the ability to do that. Now, we've seen something like this happen already where one reason I think Tennessee got a lottery was because so many people in Chattanooga were driving across the state line to Georgia and spending money on the Georgia lottery. And Tennessee said, wait a minute, why are we funding the Hope scholarships for all these kids in Georgia? We should be doing our own version. I think a lot of states are going to find themselves in similar positions. I think that there will be a lot of different regulations that come out. But I think ultimately every place that has the lottery, if you can buy a scratch-off lottery ticket or a Powerball, I think you'll be able to gamble on sports.
I've heard and read reaction about states opening up their own sports books. That's how we opened the segment with you, and having a physical place to place bets. But is the better idea for individual states to do everything online, everything through phones?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And then the question gets into how do you license it? I think there's a lot of fascinating ways you could do it. To me, one that I think is kind of cool is the idea of you buy a gambling license. You have to go prove that you're old enough to have a gambling license. There's precedence for this, for instance, with fishing, right? You're supposed to have a fishing license in order to be out and fish and whatnot. You use that money to combat issues that may arise, but most of the money you could use from gambling would go into higher education, I think. And I think the bigger question becomes also in the same way that you have like a multi-state lottery, the Powerball is allowed to go and raise $400 million because there are a bunch of different states that all buy in. I think they need to have multi-state reciprocity. And I'll give you an example. I'm going down to Florida with my family on Friday as soon as the kids get out of school. I think it's crazy that I could be able to gamble in Tennessee, but when I'm at the beach in Florida, I might not be able to gamble there. So I think the law when it comes to online wagering needs to follow you in some way, so that if they want to maintain and be able to bring everybody into the light, because otherwise I can just go to an offshore book and bet the same way in Tennessee as I could in Florida. I think it's crazy that we could have all these different strange rules that govern whether or not you can gamble on sports based on your physical location.
I'm wary of asking for federal regulation, especially given the quality of the people making the laws, but I'm also wary of the Wild West. What should happen, what will happen in terms of federal regulation?
Well, I think betting on Congress to sufficiently and adequately do anything these days is oftentimes a very foolhardy method to assume. But I do think there are a couple of examples in the way that the world exists now that could apply. I mentioned the lotteries earlier. Those have basically been left over to the states, and I think the system works pretty well. The other one I would point to is alcohol. There's a basic law of alcohol in this country, and it is you have to be 21 years old in order to purchase alcohol, right? Now, that's different than, for instance, we would have with there's no national age of consent. For instance, you can get married at different ages in every state, and the age of consent is different in every state. Now, I don't know off the hand because I haven't been fortunately in the mix of that, but when I practiced law back in the day, there were sometimes major cases that would arise over, were you engaged in a relationship with a girl in Huntsville, Alabama, or in Pulaski, Tennessee? Because the difference there could be substantial based on whether she was 16 or whether she was 18 or what the law was going to be. And so I do think that there could be a benefit to larger federal guidelines, such as you have to be 18 years old in order to place a wager, or in order to place a wager, like we're going to allow interstate commerce to take place. So even if you're traveling, you have the right to place a wager because you're a resident of a particular state. The other thing is alcohol. Look at what's happened with alcohol. We've managed to deal with the fact that Budweiser's out there, Miller, Coors, all these different companies, even though the law in every state is different. Now you can buy wine in Tennessee groceries. When I would travel back and forth to California a lot, you could buy wine, liquor, or beer in grocery stores, right? The brands are the same, but there's sometimes a subtle variation in how you can consume it. I do think that the leagues would like a standardized policy in place because, let's say you have a team traveling from Tennessee to California, you'd like for the same gambling rules to be in place for both of those NFL teams regardless. But I think certainly there are precedents that suggest that state law may be different in each of those places. And frankly, look, I mean, you get taxed differently. You know, Tennessee doesn't have a state income tax. If you play a game here, you don't have to pay a state income tax, typically, versus if you go to California, you pay 13%. I mean, there are a lot of, conflicting rules and regulations across our country based on state law.
Clay, knowing Tennessee state politics the way you do, what's your level of confidence that Tennessee will get it right in terms of how to legislate this if they, in fact, allow it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, one, it gets into who are the Tennessee legislators in the Senate and the the House, who decide to get involved in this. Because I think the more sophisticated they are, the more likely they get it right. The other question is, are they setting up a legal framework for sports gambling for right now, at this exact moment in 2018, or are they doing it like it's still 2019? And the same thing could also be true. Are they doing it for 20 years from now? I think they need to be progressive as opposed to regressive. And a lot of times if you get older people who are not aware of the technology, you end up with a law that is 20 years behind where people already are. That's why I say if you had a law that required everybody to, for instance, go somewhere physically and place a bet, I think a lot of people would just say, screw it, I'm going to pull my phone out and I'll keep doing it the way I already did it. If you allow them to do it on their phone, then I think there's a lot of people who would say, you know what, I'd like to be within the law with my bets and behave in a legal fashion if I have the opportunity to do it. But I'm not willing to inconvenience myself and drive down the, you know, drive 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes away and stand in a line to place a bet when I can do it in 2 minutes on my phone.
Clay Travis with us on 104.5 The Zone.
I will absolutely lose it if there's any element of integrity fee put on this. Do these leagues actually think that there's, and is there any scenario where you see them getting 1% or some infinitesimal cut that will add up to a lot when we're already giving them tax breaks on stadium. In Nashville, we're giving John Ingram 10 free acres of land to develop as a side deal for his thing. How much exactly does he need from us, given his...
Well, I think the idea that the leagues and the owners are going to get a percentage of every wager passed is a bet is laughably absurd. I mean, I think it speaks to their lack of understanding of gambling in general. You know, the dice maker doesn't get a share of every craps roll. You are providing the sport already. And Las Vegas, I think, has a pretty good idea of how this would work in the state of Nevada in general, because they've been doing it for generations now. If I were advising people, I would say follow what they have already done, because they've tested things and they're confident in them working. I think the way that the leagues and the teams are going to make money is the television ratings, I think, will go up the more people gamble. Statistically, people watch games longer when they have money on the game. So if more people are gambling, then I think television ratings would go up. I think certainly the value of an individual sports viewer will increase. If you remember a couple of years ago, FanDuel and DraftKings came on and spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to get people to try their product. I think that the sports gambling companies are going to come out and go after the audience aggressively. They'll spend money on all these games. I think also the individual leagues and individual teams, much like in English Premier League soccer, will be able to sign their own deals. So I think that's where the money comes from. I think the idea that they deserve some sort of integrity fee is absurd. Look, the reason why we watch your games is because we believe that there is integrity in them. If we need to pay you in order to believe that there is integrity, what's been going on beforehand, I think that that's a non-starter in terms of negotiation.
Clay, are you fascinated by the different stances from the pro leagues, like the NBA versus the NFL, and what we saw yesterday?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with who's running the leagues. I think, to his credit, Adam Silver has understood what's going on in the real world. I always like to use this example. They told me in law school, we had one of my law professors had been a law clerk for one of the older professors, one of the older Supreme Court clerks. And this guy was deciding whether or not abortion should remain legal. And the clerks had all ordered pizza. And he came walking in and he saw them eating pizza, and they were eating pepperoni pizza. And he said, "What is that on the top of the pizza? Is that a tomato?" And they said, "No, you know, Judge, it's a pepperoni." And the guy didn't know that pepperoni pizza existed. Like, he was so, like, such a ivory tower, wow, like, outside. Like, it's a great example, right? Like, you've got this guy who's deciding what the law of the land should be.
His wife probably dressed him, too, if I had to guess.
Yeah, potentially.
In crab shorts. I mean,
you think about that, and I think that's where we run into. You got a lot of guys oftentimes who are in their 70s, who are in their 80s, that don't really understand the modern landscape of the world in general. And that little metaphor, that little analogy, has always stuck with me, because it happens in courts all the time. You know, the courts are trying to figure out what the law should be, and they're applying the knowledge that a judge had from when he was a normal guy 50, 60 years ago. And so I think that gets into one of the big challenges here, is some of these older guys who are running leagues don't really understand. Like, Roger Goodell should sit down with his kids and be like, "Hey, are you guys gambling on our games on your phones?" And I think there's probably a good answer that they are, or their friends are. I think Adam Silver, to his credit, has talked about the fact that he said in NBA games, looked around and seen that people are live wagering at halftime and on different things associated with those games. I think with the Wi-Fi devices and everything else, it's possible you could be able to gamble during the course of a game. Is somebody going to make a field goal? Is you going to get an interception? You know, live wagering in-game, I think, could certainly become a real thing. I think, and this is also fascinating, if you are, for instance, the Nashville Sounds, and you're having, and I'm not saying the Sounds are having a hard time getting people to come to their game, but is it possible that they could get more people to come if they said, "Hey, we'll give you $100 gambling credit on the Nashville Sounds app, and you can gamble on whether or not our guys are going to throw strikes, hit home runs, get caught stealing, all these different things in the same way that you get a, you know, Frosty if the Predators score 4 goals or more"? How many guys out there would come in and maybe, "Hey, if you're willing to gamble $100 on our game, we'll give you unlimited beer"? You know, like, I think there are lots of ways that teams, even outside of the mainstream, you know, minor league teams, teams that are having trouble drawing on a random Tuesday, could come up with a lot of different ideas to get people into the stadium, which could be pretty fun and pretty cool.
Don't want to let you go without covering your other favorite topic, though you got to be quick. Katie Nolan's making $1 million a year. I have trouble finding her on anything. She does a podcast and she's on some small digital platforms. Is there anybody making that kind of money for less work in sports media?
No. She is the most, I think, relative to what ESPN has her doing. And you can certainly fault ESPN for saying, hey, you're the one paying her. Look, if people want to pay me millions of dollars and not require me to do work, I'll take it. But I think that's a failure of ESPN. I don't think there's anybody making that kind of money doing less, unless it's Jemele Hill, who I think is making $3 or $4 million a year and writes one or two columns a week now.
Clay, loved having you on, man. Great perspective, and keep up the great work.
Thanks.
Hey, appreciate y'all having me on. Always enjoy.
Yeah, thanks, Clay.
Clay Travis, Outkick the Coverage, outkickthecoverage.com. 615-737-1045, our number. Reaction to where this could all be headed in the gambling world.
Plenty to unpack right there. 615-737-1045.
If it's time to begin comparing prices for that car, truck, or SUV, make sure that you include Music City Autoplex in your search. I was in the market a little over 2 years ago, and no other dealership topped the way Music City Autoplex treated me. If you're in the market for a certified pre-owned vehicle, but don't have the hours to spend pricing or comparing, make sure that Music City Autoplex is on your short list of dealerships. It's a bold claim, but I'm telling you, no one can beat the prices at Music City Autoplex. They know how to buy smart. They buy more. They pass the savings on to you with your purchase because they buy for less than the competition. Compare them against anyone locally or on the web. They're located 15 minutes from downtown, 2430 Gallatin Pike, just north of Rivergate. And they're online at MusicCityAutoplex.com. You're going to find the uncommon dealership. Again, I'm a customer. I vouch for the way they do business. You'll leave impressed with how they go above and beyond to ensure you have the very best car buying experience. And the bottom line is you deserve that. It's one of the largest purchases we make. Be sure that you buy from people you can trust long term. People who possess an uncommon level of integrity. Those are the people you'll find at Music City Autoplex. Make sure you give them the opportunity to earn your business. 2430 Gallatin Pike, just north of Rivergate. And check them out on the web at MusicCityAutoplex.com.